This is the John Clayton Show
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in on the conversation at 866-979-ESPN. Now here's your host,
the professor,
John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
I'm well, Dr. John. It's good to see you feeling a little bit better this week.
Yeah. I mean, it was last week I had no idea if I could make it through the show.
Yeah, I know. It's been a tough couple of weeks for you, but glad to hear you're bouncing back.
Yeah, trying to and trying to get as much rest as I possibly can. Much needed,
yeah,
I guess.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, it'll catch up to you.
Oh, yeah.
You'll get there. So, let me ask you this.
Go right ahead.
I know you and Irish were just talking about kind of like the decline of these college all-star games.
Uh-huh.
What do you think about the Jets and what they may be seeing at the Senior Bowl this week? And I think that it's kind of interesting that they did get to coach finally this year after, what, 20, 25 years being away. And I wonder if it has anything to do with Phil Savage being on the crew now.
Could be. I mean, you know, and honestly, if you go back and, you know, talk to teams and all that stuff, having the ability to coach these seniors, you know, is a big aid because you get to spend more time with them. You get to know them better. And it does, I think, help in the drafting process, particularly if the seniors are that good.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't agree because you get to see them.
Yeah.
Well, I don't say 24/7, but you kind of get to see them interact with everybody. You get to see a sense of their personality that no Wunderlich test is going to give you any insight into, or some sort of like 10-minute speed dating interview. So I agree. You get to see the person in action under a somewhat stressful situation, a social situation, and you get a feel for what they'd be like in a clubhouse, not just what they can do out on the field. So, yeah. I think it's a wonderful opportunity,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's a great chance for the Jets because they've got such great draft capital this year, and I mean, they've got two picks in each of the first five rounds except for round three, so I really think it gives them a chance to really score perhaps in rounds four and five this year.
Right.
So I think it's just a wonderful timing opportunity for the Jets.
Well, and it's been about the last couple of days I started looking through some mock drafts, and it sure seems as though the way the draft shapes up, whether it's seniors or non-seniors or underclassmen and all that stuff, you know, the two first-round picks in whatever order are going to be offensive tackle or an offensive lineman and a defensive edge rusher.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that at four,
mm-hmm.
One of the top couple of edge rushers could actually fall to the Jets.
Right, agreed.
It does look like Jacksonville's probably going to, I'm guessing, is going to take a tackle if they're smart.
Yeah, I think everything it seems like they're going to do is take Neal, the tackle.
Yeah.
But,
so,
you know, I tell you what's interesting, and this affects Irish Mankey, is that, you know, the Notre Dame safety, and this will affect the Jets, too. The Notre Dame safety, a lot of people have as the third pick in the draft, and I don't think they're too far off on that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when you first asked me about it. Yeah, Harrison is the guy I really want to see the Jets take at four because I think that he's a playmaker, you know, and that's one thing the Jets need on both sides of the ball. They're slowly starting to accumulate them, I think, on offense. But defense, my God, they need a ball hawk. They need a playmaker.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what Harrison is. And not only that, but he's like, you know, the Swiss Army knife type that just, you know, translates so well into the modern-day NFL. He can cover. He can cover the big guys. He can cover the little guys. He can play center field. He can come down and rush. He can play in the box. He's exactly what the modern-day NFL is looking for. So he's the guy I'm really hoping they'll pick at number four.
Yeah. And, you know, he could go number three, but, you know, he's there's no doubt he's that good. I mean, and, you know, Irish Mankey identified him right in the middle of the season as being that good.
Oh, yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah, he's been all over him.
Yeah.
And, no, he's the guy I really want to see them take at number four, and that's what I told you a couple weeks ago, and I still hold to that because I think he's, I mean, and they need him. I mean, they desperately need safety help.
Right.
You know, whether they pick up a veteran in free agency, which they might because there's a couple out there, and that'd be fine. But they still need a second one, because quite frankly, I think they still need two. Because honestly, right now, I don't think they have an NFL caliber safety on their roster.
Well, it's, I mean, that bad. You know, you don't think they're going to bring back Marcus May then?
Well, I would be surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not going to happen until way late in the process. But I can, I mean, you never say never. And with Joe Douglas, if the price is right, I suspect he'll jump. But I can see the Jets being a little bitter with Marcus May, because he wasn't honest with him about that DUI case that he's fighting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they kept trying to push for the contract extension, and they never divulged the DUI. And I'd be pretty chapped about that if I'm Joe Douglas.
Understand, yeah. And then on top of it, he's coming up a major injury.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a tough injury, especially in the defensive backfield. So, you know, like I said, he's a good clubhouse guy, a solid safety, not a playmaker, but he's solid. But I think, you know, if the price is right, who knows? I'm a little more intrigued by LaMarcus Joyner. If they try to sign him again, because he's a free agent and never really got on the field.
Never got on the field, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I'd be a little more intrigued with him than I would Marcus.
But I was looking at some of the numbers, and you know, some of the sites that look into contracts and things like that. They still think Marcus May in the open market can get $13.2 million a year. And I would agree with you that the Jets aren't going to pay that.
Oh God, no. Weren't willing to pay it when he was healthy and honest.
No, I know.
You know? So, and then coming back from an Achilles, and he's not a kid anymore. He's what, like 27, 28? So
right, right.
I don't know, John. And don't forget, I don't know what the league is going to do with him and his DUI conviction. He may very well be missing the first quarter of the season.
Probably two games.
Well.
I mean, you may be right. It may be longer than that, because the fact that they hid the information, you know, that works against them.
Yeah, I can definitely see the administration being pretty chapped about that. I don't know, but the NFL is a sucker born every minute, so, you know, desperation breeds overspending, as we well know in New York, or I should say New Jersey.
Right.
But I'd like to see Harrison go with the fourth pick. I still contend, and it's what I think is really going to be interesting about this draft is what's going to happen down around 9, 10, because you got Washington picking at 11, and none of these quarterbacks are, you know, designated to be top, you know, top five or anything like that. But when it gets to be about, you know, 9, 10, 11, I think you're going to see some of them start peeling off the board, especially because Washington needs one. So I'm kind of wondering if the Jets may be, with that 10th pick, sitting pretty to deal it to a team that needs to pick up a quarterback. And the 10th spot, I think, would be ideal for a couple of these kids. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Joe Douglas jump back from that 10th pick and add to draft capital either later in the draft this year.
Here's my problem with that is that it's like they've already accumulated a lot of draft choices. Pick quality. And, you know, if the 10th pick, and I think the 10th pick has a chance to be a good position player, draft him. Don't give, and because, you know, there's still a chance that Denver might take a quarterback at 7 and then Washington take one with their pick. I mean, that may be a little bit of a reach. It may not. But, some of the mock drafts have, you know, Washington taking a quarterback and Denver taking a quarterback. Although, ultimately, I don't think Denver's drafting a quarterback, because I think they're going to be trading for and getting Aaron Rodgers.
You really do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, because think about this. Huh. It's like, Aaron, I can't see Aaron wanting to stay. So he's going to be traded. And, of course, if you're Denver, and see if you appreciate this, you know, with Zach Wilson and all the quarterbacks in the AFC, who are you going to find to compete against the good young quarterbacks, the Joe Burrows, the Justin Haber, you know, certainly Patrick Mahomes. I mean, you need a stud quarterback. And even though he's toward the end of his career, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a stud quarterback. They have to trade for him.
Yeah. No, it makes a whole lot of sense. And Denver's got a pretty stout roster to put around him. I mean, they're not a fledgling team. And they've got weapons. It's just the real piece that they've been missing now for, you know, the last several years is the quarterback.
Right.
So I would agree that, I mean, if they can finish that, fill that quarterback hole, I think that they're in contention. It's just a question. I wonder, you know, how much do you think, well, okay, strike that. I think them picking up Hackett as the head coach was a clear indication that I think they're going to make a big play for Rodgers. So I think that was a pretty good sign there. What do you think is the Packers going to be able to command?
I mean, this is a Denver Post from a couple weeks ago. A number one next year. We're in this year, 2022. A number two that can upgrade to a number one based on, you know, how far the team goes into playoffs. And then, Jerry Jeudy, the wide receiver, and then two young defensive players.
Boy.
Yeah.
I guess you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, stay tuned. Hey, but got to run.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack.
All right, take care, John. Have yourself a good week, and keep the rebound coming.
Okay, sounds good. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Well, there's no guarantee that the Seattle Seahawks are going to be able to get Sean Desai, the Chicago guy candidate for defensive coordinator. He is interviewing this weekend with the New York Giants for the defensive coordinator job, as is Wink Martindale. So it's like looks like there's a little competition there. And so we'll see where that goes, because, you know, it looks like Patrick Graham is probably going to leave and go to a different team. He's their defensive coordinator from last year. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rick in Seattle. Hey, Rick.
Hi, John. Hey, happy Saturday. Two questions.
Yeah.
One a rules-related one, one Super Bowl. And first one, it's one I've been kicking around for many years with friends.
Mm-hmm.
It all started with the Seahawks when they played Atlanta back in, I think it was 2013, in the playoff game. It had a furious comeback. They got ahead. Atlanta had 31 seconds to get down the field, and they eventually did and kicked a field goal. But I'm going to relate that to the Kansas City Buffalo game, and with, you know, very little time left, and how a team can try and kill some clock on defense without people running plays. And you've probably talked about this with your many interviews across the nation at some point. But what is against a defense trying to just hold every receiver coming off the line? And then, because it's a 5-yard penalty, automatic first down, but it might kill 3, 4, 5 seconds potentially. And I don't know if there's this, it just seems like a team would have done that by now, so there must be a reason that they haven't, but I don't know what it is. So that's why I'm asking.
Well, if you go back to the early 2000s, I mean, that's what the Indianapolis Colts claimed that the Patriots did. You know, just held their receivers and all that stuff. And so it's like, the only thing is, it's a penalty, and you don't get, I mean, time. You give them more time to do things, and you get the 5 yards. But yeah, you're right; they don't get the yards. Because I mean, that was the thing that's so amazing about the divisional round. Because just about in every game, there was big plays in the final seconds when there's no very little time left in the clock that set up, like in the three games for field goals, field goal drives. Then, of course, you're right about the 13 seconds it took, less than 13 seconds for Kansas City to be able to get their field goal to take the game into overtime. So it's like, but, you know, I guess what it comes down to is that, if you know the penalties are coming, you're going to throw the flag as fast as possible and give the other team as much time as they can.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe you catch the offense off guard, maybe at least on the first one, you know, in the Buffalo Kansas City game, you know, if you held, Kelce on that play. Obviously, he doesn't go down the seam for 25 yards and get into field goal range. But anyway, I'll try to, when I run into an NFL coach, I'll ask them too.
There you go. Go right ahead.
Probably going to be never. Anyway, other question on Rams defensive rush and
right.
what maybe Mr. Burrow is facing and maybe how this is different than the other defenses he's played. The Raider game, average quarterback, maybe upper, you know, with Carr, maybe a little above average, you know, mm-hmm. with not a great defense. And then he has Tennessee with a really good defense, but they were playing against a very mediocre quarterback in Tannehill. And then, you know, they've got is a very good pass rush and a
yes.
good quarterback on the other side of the ball. And it just seems like Kansas City got to him a few times, and I don't know how he slithered out some of those sack attempts. It was just amazing. But I think Mr. Donald and Mr. Miller are going to offer a little different type of situation if they're close to him in a sack.
Yeah, don't forget Mr. Leonard Floyd. Don't forget
yep.
him.
Yep.
But I'll tell you where,
because
here's the interesting thing, and this is what's got to be a little bit scary to the Bengals, is that Chris Jones, you know, is one of the best defensive tackles in football, was able to get, you know, a bunch of pressure. But Chris Jones, as mm-hmm. good as he is, as great as he is, I don't think he's had a sack in a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong on that, but I think I saw that stat, and it's like, whoa, that's incredible.
I mean, you know, obviously pressures can be good, and if you get a quarterback off his spot, you know, that can change things. But Stafford's got a lot of experience. He'll throw a pick here and there that can really hurt the team. But I just feel like that defense is finally maybe going to catch up with that Cincinnati offensive line.
I could see it.
You know, with a defensive line as good as the Rams are. But anyway. Well, I'll let you go, and I'll hear more. Are you on next Saturday, Professor?
Every Saturday, yeah.
Okay, just checking in. I'm sure it'll be Super Bowl mania talk, so I'll listen in and get the latest. Thanks for all your time, and have a good day.
Yeah, because as you know, that's the eve of the Super Bowl. Let's go to RC in Monroe. Hey, RC.
Hey, John.
Hey.
Hey, I just want to say two things before I get to my question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I work with Bill, your caller Bill.
You work with?
Bill, your caller Bill.
Oh, okay. That's great. Okay.
Yeah. And two, he's not a true Seahawks fan. He's a Cooper Kupp fan.
That's fine. let's put it this way. I still go back. I remember doing the sidelines down in Los Angeles, you know, for the Seahawk game. And that was Cooper Kupp's first chance to play. And I looked at him and I said, whoa, this guy's really good. And that was the first.
Yeah, he is good.
I mean, and that was the first game that he really started doing things because, you know, they were able to throw the ball to him in the middle of the field, and he was just great. But again, it's like one of those vivid memories that you get, you know, when you're covering games and things like that. And you say, whoa, look at this guy.
Yeah, I'm just glad he is from our state. I just wish we could have had him on our team.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what it is, but if you look at what the Rams do, they take a bunch of guys from either Washington, in the state of Washington. You know, they're real big on that. I mean, so it's like, they have good scouts up here taking a look at the talent up here in the state of Washington. Yeah, because, you know, I got Victor Rapp. I mean, Greg Gibson's doing such a good job at the defensive tackle. So it's like, they do a good job of that.
Yeah, they sure do. And two, I really think the Bengals are going to pull out a victory.
Mm-hmm.
I just how they came back from 18-point deficit was just phenomenal.
It really was. I mean, and that quarterback is, I mean, again, I respect so many of the quarterbacks, the young quarterbacks, because there's like nine quarterbacks in the AFC 26 years or younger. And I'm not counting, you know, the Houston quarterback or some of the, but I'm talking about there's nine quality quarterbacks, 26 or younger.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a new evolution, I should say, of quarterbacks that are coming up, how they're playing. Just totally different from quarterbacks 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's going to be interesting to see is how well they can dominate any interconference games. Like, I was surprised. Like, I thought that, particularly this past year, with the, the NFC having the extra road game and the AFC getting the extra home game, that there was going to be a big difference in the interconference games. But it turned out to be, 29-30-1 or something like that. It's like there's only a one game difference. But, I think it's going to be, bigger next year, because you've got a lot more NFC teams that don't have the quarterback, and you'll have more AFC teams with the quarterback.
Right. Okay, now my question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just kind of heard, because I was in and out of my car yesterday, I kind of heard a little bit about what's going on with the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Did we hire somebody, or did we just interview somebody?
No, it hasn't been confirmed by the team yet, but supposedly they're promoting Clint Hurt, the defensive line coach, who is a great coach, and then they're bringing in Ed Donatell to work on the defensive staff. And then, Sean Desai, who's they interviewed for the defensive coordinator job, they're looking at him. But I know, as I said, at the beginning of the segment, he's interviewing today for the New York Giant defensive coordinator job. So I don't know, where that stands. He's going against Wink Martindale, who was fired by Baltimore. So it's like,
okay.
But again, that doesn't mean he's going to take it. I mean, doesn't mean he's going to get offered it.
Right.
Just don't know.
Who would want to come to the Seahawks?
I know.
Seahawks, Bears, I think I'll take the Hawks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no doubt. And, of course, I mean, sure, if you're Sean Desai right now, you don't have a job.
Right.
Because, they fired, Matt Nagy, and so that whole staff has been let go.
Wow. So when I know the Hawks kind of, they like to announce everything all at once. So who else do they need to hire?
They probably need one more defensive coach. I think they may be okay on the defensive line. I think coaching wise, because, I thought, for example, Gus Bradley was going to be the guy. He ended up taking the Colts job yesterday. But what I like about this move is that now you've got two guys. Because you've got Clint Hurt and you've got Donatell. And so that's two. And then we'll see if they can get the shy. But, I like that a lot.
Okay, that's good. That sounds good.
Hey, thank you for the phone call.
All right, thank you, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Bob in Bellevue. Hey, Bob.
Hey, John. It's good to hear you, and always good to hear that you're doing well.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
No problem. I wanted to talk about this Brian Flores lawsuit that's going on. As a person of color myself, being a Steelers fan first and, of course, the Seahawks, what is going on with Roger Goodell, and why does this man still have a job? This is my comment about it, because it's been 10 years since he's already made comments about he wanting to change and bring in more minorities.
Mm-hmm.
And I called this show before about 3 years ago asking, when are we going to have coaches that look like me or look like someone else instead of just, the same old, same old. And I've come to the conclusion that it seems like in the NFL, owners want coaches that fit a certain mold, people that look like them.
Yeah.
And, look at all the owners here. And I'm just like, why? What is it? What is the issue with hiring a black man as a coach? What is the issue of hiring a Hispanic man as a defensive coach? Why is it? And it starts in college too. If you look at all the coaches and all the assistant coaches, they start young and they're all white. We got one black coach.
Yes. It's ridiculous.
I think it's time that Roger Goodell gets fired. Why does this man still have a job? He has failed. And Bill Belichick, who the hell is this guy? He seems to be knowing the scam is a scam. So I'd like to get your comments on this, because it's just, to me, I'm finding it very pathetic, and I'm hanging on a thread and still being a fan of the NFL.
Well, the reason Roger Goodell is going to stay as the commissioner is, you know, the revenue $16 billion a year heading toward 25, and it's going to make a big jump coming up in 2022. So revenue is the key, and what do owners like? Revenue.
Money.
Okay. So it's like so that's not going to change. I mean, it was interesting. There was a story that came out yesterday, and I think there's validity to it, and see if you agree, that Roger made a mistake when he didn't fine the then Oakland Raiders when they hired John Gruden, because they didn't do anything as far as the Rooney Rule. They just went on and paid him 10 years, $100 million, and that was about it. And so they think that because as somebody who wrote this, there was five minority coaches hired since then, and they've all been fired. So
yeah,
do you think there's validity to that?
Definitely. I am not smart enough to understand why they get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get it. I remember that. I thought the Raiders got fined for that too. When they just hired him, without any interviews. Said, oh, okay, no problem. And wasn't that the same case with the coach in Dallas? Or did they actually do the interview with two coaches?
Dallas did. They did okay. I mean, they complied. I mean, Jerry Jones is not going to comply with the rules and anything of that nature. So it's like, they had their minority interviews, because I think, they at least did one or two on staff, because, back then, I mean, you can actually just, have the minority interviews being on staff. And then what they did this past year is that you have to make one external visit from somebody.
Who would be good? A good commissioner for the NFL, and who does walk the walk and talk the talk?
Mm-hmm.
Pete Carroll.
Yeah, but
I mean, that guy is out there every time telling us, asking us, come on, man, can we not just work this out? And he is, and I'm going to drop the subject real quick and go to Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
That kid needs to wake up, man. His comment about his diamond crusted Nike ring, what is he wearing that for?
He is
an awesome QB, and I think he is going to be the AFC. What he's done, that game was amazing.
Right.
That's what makes me a fan still to this day. That kid is going to be awesome. But keep your jewelry stuff to yourself.
Agreed.
I don't even know. That was just stupid.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of players do that on both sides, like wearing the flashy jewelry. But I don't even think the reporter should have asked him that question if it's real or not.
Yeah, but that's the one thing. If we have a chance to ask, we're gonna ask just to see what's true and what's not true.
Okay, Aaron Rodgers. If he goes to the AFC, do you think he's gonna dominate like he did here in the NFC with all those new young QBs in there?
He won't dominate. They'll be competitive, but he won't dominate like he has with Green Bay. Because it's just going to be that much tougher. Because when you think about this, one of the things that's so tough for a young quarterback is winning that first playoff game. Now Joe Burrow has been able to do it and all that stuff, but because again, you're going against great quarterbacks. Well, now in the regular season, you get great quarterbacks almost every week.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like dominate? No, I don't think anybody's going to dominate.
Would you still agree that the NFC West is still the strongest division in the NFL?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I have to, too.
No, in fact, one of the things I said this week, with New Orleans losing Sean Payton, Aaron Rodgers probably leaving Green Bay, I mean, you basically have only five playoff teams, four teams in this division, the NFC West, and Dallas. That's it.
That's where I agree with you. I read that article you wrote, and I think the Seahawks do have a strong opportunity not only just to make the playoffs, mm-hmm. but to actually win the division.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, because, again, the thing I wrote in the article is that they are playing the NFC South, which is now a diminished division. They've got the fourth place schedule, so instead of playing the top teams in three different divisions, they've got Detroit, the New York Jets, and the New York Giants. Those are winnable games. So the tough part is, in the NFC West, but then, the way this division is, they all like to beat up on each other. And so the chance of going 3-3 in the division, which they were 3-3 last year, are pretty good. But in the non-division games, they could do great. Hey, Bob, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Ed in Denver. Hey, Ed.
Good morning, JC.
Good morning.
Glad to hear you're feeling better and got some rest.
Yep, I need more, but at least I'm feeling better.
And is Pat doing better as well?
No, she's been fine.
Yeah, excellent. Hey, I want to take you on a trip down memory lane, and then I have sort of a proposal for you.
Okay.
So here's the season. You remember the 19... So since the Rams were in the Super Bowl, this is a Rams story, but more of a Viking story in many ways. So you remember the 1969 Rams, who started the season 11-0, and then went on to lose the very first game in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you remember that at all?
To a degree, because that's. I didn't follow it. I mean, I obviously followed it a lot, but I didn't start covering to 1972.
Right.
So it's like, it's a distant memory.
I remember you thinking that the Packers-Niners game was, like I thought, probably the Packers would dominate that. So it was certainly surprising to me, and I assume to you, that the Niners end up winning that game, and not only winning it, but winning it in interesting fashion and playing pretty well in some pretty adverse conditions.
Well, that's why I tried to I stayed away from predictions in the last, 3-4 months. Because, it's like, look at the chance of being
predictions
wrong.
Predictions have been difficult.
Yeah.
One of the football pools I participate in involves picking the games and rating them from 1 to 16, depending on how certain you are. I think I did about the worst I've ever done in that poll, and the person who won, I really have no idea how they did it. But where I was going with the Rams in 1969, so they played the Vikings in the first round of the playoffs, after they started the year 11-0. They were 1-done in the playoffs, so they played the Vikings in Minnesota in a snowstorm. And after that happened, everyone was saying, oh, California teams are soft, they can't play in the snow, and da-da-da-da-da. So that made it, I think, particularly interesting watching that Packers-Niners game.
Mm-hmm. No, true. I mean...
So here's my...
Go ahead. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go. You go.
So here's my proposal for you. I'm going to name six players on the Seahawks, and we're going to say whether they're here next year or not, and if I get it right more than you, then I get a slot weekly on your show, and if you get it right, you get to do whatever.
Okay, well, you got a slot weekly on the show anyway, so it's like, go right ahead.
No, I'm with you. Okay, so here I go. So Rashad Penny, I say not on the team next year.
I say he's back. 5.2 million a year.
It's a good deal for Rashad Penny. I agree.
Mm-hmm. He may be a little bit less, but I think, because no running back in free agency is going to get more than six. Didn't happen last year.
Yeah, and the reason he's going to be on the team is because other teams are going to be wary of him with his injury history.
Right, right. Agreed.
Yeah.
Number two.
All right, next, Bobby Wagner. I say yes.
Yes, I say yes. I think he'll be back. He'll take
Diggs,
a pay cut.
I say yes. Yeah, I say yes to Diggs. Yeah, Wagner's going to have to take a pay cut.
Yeah. I say yes on Diggs.
Gerald Everett, I say no.
I still think he can come back. I'll go yes on him.
Okay. Will Disley, I say yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
Dwayne Brown, I say no.
No, I would tend to agree, too. It doesn't look promising, even though he was selected for his fifth Pro Bowl. It'll be at the Pro Bowl tomorrow because he ends up replacing Trent Williams. So, hey, but okay, so we got the six. So how did I do? Did I do okay?
Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, so we agree on everyone except
Penny.
Except Penny, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hey, but I've got to run.
All right.
Okay.
Talk, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rob in Olympia. Hey, Rob.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling.
I was wondering if I could get your opinion on Pro Football Reference putting the unofficial sack numbers on their site, and also how dominant Coy Bacon was in 76 and Al Baker was in 78.
Yeah, no, they were fantastic. And really, I mean, I think it's Jim Tunney that did all the research for the, you know, the back numbers, and then, you know, Pro Football Reference, which does a great job of accumulating, you know, information, you know, put it in there, which I thought was a great thing to do. So it's what, you know, Pro Football Reference did not research that. And again, a guy that's been covering this league, I mean, you know, as a researcher, as a stat guy, as an observer, you know, I think it was him that did that, and he does such a great job of doing it. Because, I mean, you have to think, one, I mean, they weren't counting sacks. Two, you had to figure out, okay, what can be considered a sack? And then three, you know, how many can it go to a certain player and all those different things? And he was able to do that. And so, but no, it's like to be able to see those type of sacks carried out longer than they were counting sacks, I think was great.
I was also wondering if I can ask you what you think those morons that the Texans are going to do, whether or not Watson's going to be traded before or during the 2022 draft.
Mm-hmm.
Or cut, or whatever they're going to do.
Everything I hear is that they're leaning toward hiring Josh McCown, the quarterback, with no head coaching experience and no coaching experience whatsoever. But that's typical Texans. And then the other thing was, you know, the Watson trade, you know, could be a little more complicated. I mean, I think that, you know, Carolina is going to be the team that goes for him the most. You know, because I know that's what Tepper, the owner, David Tepper, that's what he wants. I mean, he wants Watson. You know, like, for example, some people wonder about Miami being involved, but right now Miami's such a mess. I can't, even though they have the draft choices and everything else, that very well might not happen, and they may just stick with Tua. Now, again, we'll find out in the next, by tomorrow or Monday, whether they're hiring Kellen Moore or Mike McDaniels, the 49er offensive coordinator, and where he stands on the quarterback situation. But right now, you know, the Watson thing gets a little bit more complicated, but ultimately he'll be traded.
But you don't know whether it's going to be before.
It would have to be before, because if you're going to be a team that is looking for a quarterback, you don't want to wait that long. You want to get it done. And so it's like, if you're going to wait till after the draft, then, you know, what are you going to do at quarterback? It was, if you're Carolina, for example, are you going to stay with Sam Darnold? You know, you're not going to bring Cam Newton back. So, I think it's done before the draft, if there's going to be a trade. But I think it'll be a trade.
Do you know what his cap hit for them is this year if he's on the team?
I didn't look at it, so I'd have to do a little bit of research on that. So I do not have that right now. Hey, but thank you for the phone call.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, let's go to Steve in Skyway. Hey, Steve.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Kind of a slow week, nothing going on, huh?
Oh, no, just real quiet. Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Hey, I wanted to start out, first of all, my wife made me watch it. I usually don't watch it, but watching Russell yesterday in that pro skills challenge,
yeah.
If we keep him clean in the pocket, you see what he can do.
Oh, no question. I mean, he's such a great player.
He is. And then you guys were talking earlier about Cooper Kupp. I got a comp for you. I look at Cooper Kupp play, and what I see is a bigger, faster Steve Largent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair.
And I was doing some just pie-in-the-sky daydreaming about the Seahawks roster. And I couldn't help but think, we have to find a defensive tackle in the Cam Jordan, Cam Hayward mold.
Mm-hmm.
Put there next to Puna.
Right.
And then I was also thinking about the wide receiver. How good would a Tyler Boyd or a T. Higgins look on the Seahawks?
I mean, look good because, again, what you're looking at is a third receiver.
And they're big receivers.
Oh, yeah, big receivers. Yeah, there's no doubt.
You know, and then I wanted to comment on the Flores situation.
Yeah.
You know, we talked previously about ownership has its privileges.
Right.
But with those privileges also comes responsibility and accountability.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL owners, and I'm not going to broad brush all of them, but there's a particular group of owners in there. These are just kind of like frat boys, and they're just behaving badly.
Mm-hmm.
The responsibility of the owners is to run the franchise as ethically as possible, profitably as possible, and to win football games.
Right, right.
And these guys have lost track of that. I've often heard you say that in some instances the NFL is a copycat league.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the stuff they're copying as far as their treatment of employees, the NFL minority coaching situation, this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum, and it can't continue to happen. You had an earlier caller asking what can be done about this. The solution to this is pretty simple, really. You have to have minority ownership in the league, and if the NFL doesn't straighten up their act, something's going to happen to them that you always talk about you would not like to see, but Congress is going to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because the NFL gets certain privileges as far as tax status and everything else via Congress.
Right.
And with the political situation in this country going on, with nobody getting along politically and get anything done otherwise, this is the kind of stuff that congressmen, senators, and stuff can sink their teeth into.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because they can use it for political hay.
Yeah.
So I think the NFL should be very careful in getting this in trying to control this, because you can't PR and Madison Avenue yourself out of this one.
No, but I like to stay away from the politics and stuff like that. But something needs to be done, because again, it's just out of control. I mean, if it goes the way that I think it's going to go, if McCown gets the job in Houston, we know it's either going to be Kellen Moore or McDaniels there in Miami. I mean, you just shake your head and you go, wow.
Right. Hey, let me ask you this. The Belichick angle in this.
Yeah.
Are you buying that he really didn't know who he was emailing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't see why I wouldn't.
Well, 'cause I was wondering what his relationship with the Giants organization would be.
Let's see. The big thing, it has nothing to do with the Giants. It has everything to do with Brian Daboll.
Okay.
Yeah, because Brian Daboll used to work for Belichick, just like Flores did.
Right.
So, yes.
It just might have been Brian on his email chain, and he just hit Brian.
Huh? Yeah, he hit the wrong one. Hey, got to run here.
Take care.
Okay, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.